Hey, welcome to the Napcast. My name is David.
And my name is Seth, and we have Andrew back with us on the Napcast today.
Hey, Andrew.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about something that Andrew and I hold very dear, and that is the Nickelodeon series Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Though before we jump into that, we got to do one quick thing. Andrew, as a guest on our show, once again, we're going to ask you a question or two, and then you get the chance to ask us a question. So, Andrew, random question for you. How tall are you?
I'm exactly 5'8".
5'8", so you're just a hair below average, but that's okay because I myself am only like 5'9".
I am 2.5 inches taller than you.
Well, that's not fair.
It's like the end of the world. I had to go like drink some more milk or something.
Okay. And then another question for you. Do you prefer fat-free milk or 2% milk? Or a different kind?
There is a wrong answer.
Chocolate milk.
I don't know what it is. But actually, I grew up, we always had 2%, and that's just 2%. Always what I drank. It's like, is that like an issue?
I don't think it's an issue. I know that if you have 2% if you have 2% milk and you pour water in it, it tastes like fat-free milk.
Oh, really?
That's an actual thing.
The only reason I say it's a wrong answer was because I grew up with whole milk.
Everything
else feels like it's watered down to me.
Well, it does taste watered down if you have like whole milk or 2% milk. Now, do you have any questions for us before we launch into an episode?
Okay. I actually asked him a question last time. I actually asked you.
All right.
Like, do you have any other, again, same adult question. Like, do you actually have any, like, plans at Cedarville? Like,
plans after I graduate?
Plans after you graduate.
Boy. I'm sure I do. One thing I'd love to do is move and find a house. Another thing I'd love to do is actually get a driver's license. I don't have one of those yet.
Really?
Really?
I didn't know that.
I have a permit.
You see, with a driver's license, well, I'm from Iowa. Mm-hmm. The way we have it there, which might be a universal thing, might just be Iowa, I'm not really sure, is that when you have a permit, there's no like extra insurance or anything, and you can renew your permit, which is what I've done. Once you get an actual license, the insurance goes way up until you're like 25 or 26, because that's the range where most people are like not good drivers, is from like 16 to 25 or something like that.
Agreed.
And so your insurance is higher. Your like premiums are higher, or your deductible or whatever it's
called. Well, and the fact that you're a guy doesn't hurt anything.
That doesn't help me at all.
No. Yeah.
So unfortunately, the insurance is kind of high. So because I'm here at Cedarville and I don't have a car and I don't really need a car quite yet, I don't have a license and it's cheaper. So one of the things I'd like to do is get a license and a car. After I graduate. So is that a good answer? Would you rather talk about
actually?
That was a stellar answer. Like
all right.
That's actually a lot more than I needed, but I like that.
Avoided the question. All right. Launching into the episodes, we're going to talk about the TV show Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Dun, 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 dun,
why did we pick that one as opposed to The Legend of Korra?
Avatar: The Last Airbender, at least from what I can understand, just like when Nickelodeon picked it up, it just kind of like exploded as like a really, really well done series from beginning to end, with the exception of a couple bumps in the road. Like it's not like, I consider it almost like pretty much perfect, with the exception of like, you know, one or two episodes like the Great Divide episode, which is the best written. But it's just like so clever in like how it does its things. Legend of Korra like carries over the spirit of Avatar, especially like seasons. In my opinion, season 3 is like one of the strongest ones. People may disagree with me on that, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, it feels much more well rounded than Legend of Korra. Legend of Korra for its 4 seasons are much. It's a continuous story, but it's more broken up.
Okay,
that's so true.
And sequels are usually not quite as good as the original, with some exceptions, I'd say.
Yeah, it's very rare to find a sequel that outstrips the original. I think that's the case for Airbender and
it does.
Korra. It does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't, but I think I would agree with Andrew on that. I think Avatar is better simply because it's got such dynamic characters. Like there's none of the main characters are the same person that they were at the end of the show than the person that they started the show.
Each character has its own, I guess, character arc.
Yeah.
Which some shows and movies, they don't ever apply that to some characters. Like, nothing changes. There's, like, a conflict, but nobody learns anything from it. Or nobody feels differently. Or nobody has learned some moral lesson. It's just, oh, we had this conflict. Now we solved it. We're going to go back to be the same boring people we were before.
Yeah. I should insert here, there will be massive spoilers if you haven't seen this show that's almost 10 years old.
So
you have been warned.
If you haven't seen the show, something is wrong with you.
And you're missing out.
And you ought to be kicked out. Wait, I don't know. So if anybody who hasn't seen the show, you can just, you know, it's tune out now and come back at the end of the episode.
Let's put it this way. This show is so good that I heard of a college English class actually like doing a whole segment, and the teacher actually had this show dissected, and actually they looked into like character development. That's how popular it became. But
the other thing about the characterization in the show is that it's a kid's show. You wouldn't expect depth, something depth yeah. like that. Yeah, in a kids show.
I mean, a kids show that appeals to all ages.
Yeah, that's, it is.
Yeah, it's kind of transcendent. In
I think
that
a
nature.
Better way to put it is not a kids show, but a family show.
There we go.
I think
there
I'd agree go. With that.
It's got something for everybody. So even if you're watching it. I mean, some of the scenes may seem like, oh, that's clearly for kids' entertainment. Like, I don't enjoy that as much. But then other scenes, it's like, wow.
My cabbages!
That's just
secret
funny no matter
tunnel.
Who you are.
Okay.
Secret tunnel!
Hey, why is your forehead so red?
Nobody react to what I'm about to tell you, but I think that kid might be the Avatar.
Perfect. Hey, Seth, how's your forehead?
I'll be fine in a couple days.
Okay.
But back to the whole character development thing, actually, there was an interesting segment I saw where they talked about the character of Sokka.
Oh,
well, what they did Sokka. Is they analyzed his first three lines in the entire show. And basically what their argument they were trying to set up is basically these first three lines define who he is and like how his character is going to change throughout the show.
Now, it's been a while since I've seen it. What are Sokka's first three lines?
His first three lines is they're both in the fishing boat, or in the boat, and he's getting ready to spear a fish. And he says something along the lines of, watch this, Katara. This is how you catch a fish. It's not going to get away from me this time. What this says for about his character is where he says, check this out, Katara, is first of all, he's like looking for other people's opinions. Like he needs actually Katara's approval of him doing this and just kind of like him trying to prove himself. This is how you catch a fish. And it shows that he's basically trying to kind of show off in a sense. But then later on, he says, it's not getting away from this time, showing that he's actually done this before and failed. So which means that he is constantly trying to, like, you know, prove himself.
That is a lot of good character development for just three lines. Like, well done to the writers there.
So what it does, though, is that sets up Sokka's character throughout the rest of the series. One of the episodes I've heard people complain about is the Swordmaster episode, where people are just
that's
like...
such a good episode, though.
Yeah, they're complaining, saying, like, Sokka is, like, so insecure about himself, and, like, why is he insecure? It's like he's part of the team. Sure, you can't bend, but he's the idea guy. We've already had him established what his character is. The thing is, it's not that episode isn't about him establishing what his character is. That episode is basically bringing up Sokka's insecurity and having him learn through his own insecurity.
I mean, you look at the people that Sokka is around. Yeah. Like, he's trying to run the village as the oldest man left in his village at age, what, 12, 14, something
14,
like that.
14.
After his father left, who is this legendary chieftain, Hakoda. Mm-hmm. And he's the only member of his group of friends that can't bend an element, so there's another thing. And yeah, he's the one that's always getting in trouble or doing stupid things, and then...
Wasn't he the one that got mixed up in a whole, like, little poetry thing? Like,
yes, that was
Sokka.
The Tales of Bossing Se
that, Tales of Bossing Se, on a side note, Tales of Bossing Se is my favorite episode of the entire series.
It's funny because it's like, this episode, it's just filler. Then we get to Iroh's arc and like, what did you do?
And then we get the
that's
very...
right, girls, Iroka! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, oh no.
That's right, I'm Sokka. It's pronounced with an Aka. Young ladies, Iroka!
That's one too many syllables, bub.
They're all cheering, and then they're just all stone-faced, like, really?
Yep. And then you get to the tale of Momo, which is the last episode, or mini-sode in that episode, and it's relevant to the plot again.
Yeah.
It's so well done.
The best way I can put it is the writers, with their episodes, they always manage to, like, have each episode be important, and probably the best one example of that is, oddly... The Ember Island Players.
Yes, that's my second favorite episode in the entire series.
This is an episode that's literally a parody of the entire show, and then it foreshadows like what's about to happen in the next couple of episodes.
But it works.
It actually basically does. It's almost like you're watching this as pretty much like watching Avatar: The Last Airbender movie, where it's a parody of itself.
Wait, did you bring in the movie?
No. What have you done?
Oh, a lot of people make the joke that the Ember Island Players is literally just like what the Avatar Last Airbender movie feels like it is. But,
except way better than the movie, I'm sure.
Back to the character of Sokka. Yeah, Sokka's development, just how he goes from like just like a young, immature kid who's trying to improve himself, and when he actually like learns like what maturity is and like how exactly he advances. The other character, there's like a bunch of characters that have development, but... it's hard to decide, but I think the one that everyone usually talks about, and I'm bringing him up now, is Zuko.
Zuko is by far the most dynamic character in the entire series.
And it's not even that's like just dynamic character in just literature and like TV shows in general.
Oh, for sure.
Just to make sure for the people who are not sure, and for me, because I honestly, it's been a while since I've seen it, Zuko is the prince with the scar.
Yeah,
over his
so
eye.
Prince Zuko is the main antagonist for all of season one. And then he sort of starts to switch sides in season two and become really conflicted about whether he actually wants his birthright and his honor, which is what he's been chasing for, I think, 3 years up to that point.
Doesn't he become, like, basically a good guy towards the end?
He does. Well, again, spoilers, but it gets to the end, and he finally has everything he ever wanted.
Except for a working eye. That's not true.
He has two working eyes. Okay. Except that he still feels empty.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you watch again as he transitions from, like, grudging... I'm not sure what he is at that. Judging antagonist to full-on good guy?
He goes from... His evolution is literally... So if the first one is, like, stereotypical antagonist. Like, it's like you watch him... It's so weird, like, to watch the first season. Like, this is the... Like, when I watched as a kid, I remember back... I actually watched the first episode when I was sick in bed. I actually stayed home from school that day. So I was just, like, dying in bed. And, like, it said this new show's coming out, After House Airbender. I watched the first two episodes. Like, that was pretty good. I'm going to pass out now. But, yeah, he comes off as, like, the, like... Basically just like a pure antagonist, like, oh, this is just the antagonist. It's obvious he's the antagonist.
He's the Draco Malfoy.
The megalomaniac, like, I'm gonna take over the world.
And then later on, the second season, he becomes a refugee and his whole lifestyle has changed. He becomes an outlaw, and the Fire Nation basically is like, okay, now you can't come back, basically.
On a side note, there's also an episode in the middle of their...
You're going to say Zuko Alone?
Yeah, Zuko Alone. It's based on a John Wayne film.
Is it John Wayne? You mean Clint Eastwood, right? Or is it John Wayne?
Actually, I can't remember.
I thought it was more Clint Eastwood. It looks like his character in that very much is.
You know, actually, it is Clint Eastwood, because it's got that whole, like, wandering stranger vibe.
A man with no name.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Okay. As one of the most dynamic characters, like you say, Prince Zuko is, would you say that his character arc is part of what makes the series as a whole so good?
Absolutely, or is there a lot more? Part of it, but there is a lot more.
The other thing is just, like, their blend of humor, action, like, story to character development. With Zuko's arc, though, is the funny thing is that, so we have Zuko, but what makes him really strong is not just that, but his parallels to Aang. And then the other episode previous, this is actually the episode that really establishes Zuko's character, is
the storm.
Yeah, where it shows Aang's backstory and Zuko's backstory. You realize, like, the parallels between the two characters.
Yeah, it really does a good job of giving Zuko some humanity, but not in a campy way.
Yeah, that's just why the show is so great. It's just like it's writing and just like how they don't really like they never like put some throwaway stuff in there. Everything always has a purpose.
Yeah.
Everything is very well written, I've been told. Except for that one episode, what'd you call it? The Great Divide?
The Great Divide is the only reason why it's bad is because literally we have two warring tribes that can't get along. Apparently they had, like, back in the day, what was it? They were the same tribe at one time.
Yeah.
But it's like they're two tribe elders. Back in the day, it was a Jin Wei and Wei Jin. Had, like, a falling out, and then they're like, oh, well, he did this. And they're like, no, he did this. And they have a huge falling out. They go through this whole trial together through the Great Divide, and they manage to make it out. And Aang tells this story, like, basically saying that their, like, rivalry is all, like, a kid's rivalry, where they tell, like, the whole legend they hear is literally just about a couple of kids playing ball. And it was, like, it's, like, completely, like, nonsense, whether even warring tribes. And then they leave, like, oh, well, I guess we were acting childish. And then the two tribes get together and they leave. And Aang's just like, oh, by the way, I made that up. It was all a lie. It's like, what was the moral of that?
That Aang is a great decision maker. Is that
Aang
moral?
Is an excellent decision. Oh,
Aang is
man.
A jerk.
I feel like he makes a lot of goofy decisions in the stories.
The beginning he does. His story arc really starts to pick up at the end of season two.
It's when he loses Appa, actually, I think is one of the big
ones. That's also another big one. Because Aang has this companion named Appa, who's
a flying buffalo.
A flying bison. Who's been his companion literally since he was born or thereabouts. And so he's never been without Appa. And then all of a sudden in the middle of season two, he loses Appa. And so all of a sudden Aang feels like he's completely by himself for the first time in his life.
Which he basically is.
I mean, he still has his other human friends, but...
Appa's the only one that's actually, like, it's his only remnant of his actual past.
Yeah,
because Appa was also frozen in the ice at the beginning.
That's true, yes. Because there is a 100-year... gap
and 100-year friendship.
Well, wasn't there was another character who I think was an earthbender who really young.
Yeah, Boomy too. That's right.
Yeah. See, the one that was like, wait, there's actually three. No, actually there are 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we talk about the
Jing.
Jing, neutral Jing.
Positive, neutral, and
wait, there's
negative.
A third? Actually there are 85.
Actually there are 85.
We'll just stick to the three.
We'll just stick with the first three.
There's a couple remnants of his old society, but most of it was, I think, completely wiped out.
For the most part, yeah.
Were they faithful to that in the movie? I don't remember.
I don't think they mentioned it hardly at all in the movie.
They missed out.
They mention it, and they go to an air temple, I think, and you know that the Fire Nation wiped out the Air Nation.
Yeah.
The one of the weird things with the movie is, like, okay, so back to the Storm episode, like, it goes into his whole backstory why he ran away. And he ran away because basically they were going to say, okay, it's time for you to start your responsibility. We're going to send him off to the other air temple to, or we're going to, they said he's becoming too attached to his mentor, Monk Gyatso. Mm-hmm. So they say we need to separate him from Gyatso and then like actually put him into his Avatar training and start, you know, going off and like learning the other elements. And it's like they need to separate him from Gyatso.
Yeah.
So that's where he ran away, is because he didn't want to be taken away from his father figure and mentor.
Well, the other part of that was because they were, what they're supposed to do to elect or identify the next Avatar is they're supposed to tell them when they're 16, hey,
you're right.
They told him 4 years early because there was this whole conflict with the Fire Nation that was coming into play. And to tell a 12-year-old kid, hey, you're like...
You're the future of the world.
You're the salvation of the entire world is a little heavy to throw on him like that.
It really is.
Yeah, so is that. And of course, you have the line of, why didn't you tell us you were the Avatar? And he says,
I never wanted to be.
Speaking of the movie, I know we have a whole bunch of complaints with it. Not only just like that the main actors were not really the right ethnicity.
Well, there's that. It's not just that. It's also the fact, okay, there's actors and ethnicity. It's like, okay, you messed that up.
They didn't pronounce the names right.
It's like, can you at least act?
A lot of them couldn't.
No, they couldn't. I think some of them actually were fine. Like the person who plays Zuko was a decent actor.
Zuko was actually pretty good.
And so was Iroh.
Iroh was also good. Yeah.
The other issue, of course, is Shyamalan's direction with that. It's like, you know, you could have a great actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a terrible director, you're not going to get anywhere with it.
It's true. Well, that, and you're trying to fit 20 episodes
into like a movie or like a beginning.
An hour and a half movie, which is not gonna happen.
It never does.
And also the mythos in it too is really weird too. For instance, like in the show, the firebenders can firebend pretty much like it's spontaneous combustion pretty much. Mm-hmm. Where in the movie,
that's right, I forgot they did that.
They needed torches they had to carry with them in order to bend the fire. It has to be pre-lit.
Which is the same concept as that guy from X-Men who always had to have the lighters on his
yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to have that weird limitation. The problem is like all the fight scenes feel like less dynamic than they could be because of that. I mean, they do a bunch of like interesting fight scenes, the waterbending and everything, but it's like the show like establish like the martial art of firebending, like you have this whole mythos behind it, and it's like it just works, like they just do it. And even then, the earthbending, like there was a reviewer that made fun of this. Is like you have like 12 12 earthbenders, and they do
choreography, and the one rock goes flying by.
Yes, exactly. It's like just one rock
floats by.
Then he shows a scene from like the drill episode where we have like six earthbenders like stomp, and a tank goes flying in there. It's like, what can one earthbender do? And it shows like Toph destroying a bunch of things. This is what 12-year earthbenders could do. Throw a rock.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Although we're actually running out of time for this episode, so we're going to have to wrap things up. So once again, Andrew, we're going to have you pick a very random note. You can just hum any note that you'd like to, and Seth and I will try to harmonize, and we will sing goodbye.
I will try to aim for middle C, but I'm going to fail.
We will see how close. You have a 1 in 12 chance of hitting middle C. Well, not no, really. You have a 1 in 88 C. chance of hitting middle C.
Actually, you know what? I'll try something just completely random. No.
That was like an A to a B flat.
Yeah, I think so.
No. That's a B flat 2, I believe. Let's do it in octaves for the fun of it.
Ooh.
So you sing the B flat that he just sang, B flat 2. And I will sing the B flat above it just for the fun of it. So, ready?
All right.
Goodbye.